Welcome back, everybody, to Spokespeople Podcast, brought to you by The Bikeway here in Omaha, Nebraska. Today, we actually have some special guests. We're going to discuss something that maybe some of you know a little about, maybe some of you know a lot about, maybe some of you have never even heard of it. It was kind of a new thing over the last couple of years. It's called NICA, and I have Allison and Claire in. They are a mom and daughter team that both work and race and ride at NICA. Well, Claire rides at NICA. Allison is one of the leaders there. And so I'm going to say hello to both of them. How are you guys doing today?
Awesome.
Yeah, pretty good.
Good. So I know Claire's a little nervous today, getting on the microphone and everything like that. We were just kind of joking about that a little before the show started. Mom's a little bit more cool, calm, and collective, but that's what moms do. So anyway, we're going to introduce, Dave FDR is not here today, unfortunately, but we'll get him back for some more shows. So anyway, let's get rolling into this. First, let's talk about one of the things that I think is most important. What actually, and we're going to go with Allison here, what actually got you into cycling?
So always rode bikes as a kid, like grew up in the 80s is the way you get out of the house, right? Like that's what you did. You wanted to like escape home, you get on your bike and you just start riding.
Yep.
So I always rode bikes. When I was in college, picked up a mountain bike just because I thought it looked cool. My first outdoor love was rock climbing.
Okay.
I was super big into rock climbing in high school. Did tons of it. I lived in Kentucky. We had awesome rock climbing there.
Yeah, you do.
So that was kind of my first outdoor sport. Went to college in Cleveland. Not a lot of rock climbing up there, so kind of picked up a mountain bike, rode it around on campus and stuff. Tried a little bit of mountain biking on my own. Was not super successful because I didn't know what the heck I was doing.
Okay.
Kind of gave up on it for a little bit. Left to go work. Started working with a bunch of dudes who liked mountain biking. I was like, sweet. Like, maybe this is my chance to get back into it. Started just going on rides with them, getting left behind every 5 minutes. But I was like, I'm going to do this. Like, I just want to keep going, keep trying. Eventually, after a couple years of many failures and tears and kind of started getting better at it and started really kind of enjoying it and loving it. And that's how I got my foot in the door to mountain biking. So,
okay. So let me ask you a quick question. Let's go back to the 80s. Mm-hmm. Your first bike.
Mm-hmm.
What was it?
Oh, like for sure. Well, I have a picture of myself probably as like a 3-year-old on a super sweet like tricycle.
Nice.
So if you want to count that as my first bike, for sure. For sure, a banana seat. Handlebars, like, you know, the curvy handlebars, basket on the front.
Oh, the gorilla grip.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Like cruise that around town all over. So, yeah, other than that, whatever hand-me-down bike I got from the neighbors, usually our neighborhood, the boy next door was like a couple years older, so kind of got whatever he grew out of.
That works.
Yeah.
So when you started riding with some work colleagues, what type of work were you doing?
So I'm an engineer, a mechanical engineer.
Okay.
I was working at Westinghouse in the time in Western Pennsylvania. So sweet mountain biking there.
Yeah.
Awesome, awesome mountain biking. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, you've definitely had some actual good places to really, really ride.
Yeah, I mean, I really learned how to bike when I lived there. So actual mountains, rocks, roots, all this stuff. So that's the stuff I love to ride on. Definitely miss it around here.
Sure.
But
sure.
Yeah.
Claire, what got you into it? Mom?
Both my parents mountain bikes. So they started me when I was like 4. So I've just been doing it ever since then.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
How do you like it?
I love it.
Okay. Now, you actually, both of you compete, correct?
Yep.
Yeah.
And you ride for a team called Prairie Bloom.
Yes.
And you also ride for Prairie Bloom.
I do, but I'm also on the Nebraska Select Cycling team this year, so I'm technically not racing for Prairie Bloom. I'm racing for that team, but I can only do it for this year, so I'll be a backpack on Prairie Bloom next year.
Okay. But you also race for Millard West High School, correct?
Yeah, that's my NICA team.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now Prairie Bloom is an all women's group,
right?
And anyone out there listening, they can go online and check out Prairie Bloom. It's a phenomenal, absolute phenomenal group of women. You guys are on the top podium a lot.
Yeah, especially locally. I mean, we make up the majority of the women who race in the area anyway. So by default, we're kind of always on the podiums.
But you have a whole, I mean, you cover the gamut on riding experience, and you guys do a lot of stuff for, you know, beginning riders and skills builders and stuff like that. I've been trying to get my wife into it, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I mean, she's got a full suspension Santa Cruz, and she's never taken it on the dirt.
Send her over, man.
I know. I keep trying to do that. You know, the problem is she's worried about if she falls and breaks her hand. Her hands are really important because she's a physician, so yeah, she kind of needs her hands. So I get it, but there's still a part of me that's like, you know, go get it. You know. So Claire, but now you're at Millard West, and you're going to be a senior.
I'm going to be a senior.
College hopes.
I've been looking at Arkansas in Fayetteville.
Yeah.
We're probably going to go on more college visits over the summer, but that's the only one that I've visited so far.
Okay. Well, I definitely know about Arkansas. My father was actually from Mena, Arkansas. It was just a little bit south of there because he didn't ever live there. He was a military kid, so he grew up around the world, but been down there a lot. Fayetteville obviously has amazing trails, right? University of Arkansas has actually amazing business. Amazing engineering, and I don't think people recognize it, but I know their business is like a top 40 school in the country because my daughter was looking at it. Mm-hmm. And but then you're also in that beautiful area right down there.
Yeah,
it's gorgeous. You know,
you've got all the
mountain bike trails on campus all over the place.
It's just, I mean, it's like a mountain biker's dream. Now, do they have a team down there?
They don't.
Do they have a club?
They've been trying to start one for several years now, but it just hasn't taken hold.
Okay. Well, you know, the Walmart family puts a lot of money into Arkansas's university. They're definitely, you know, Razorbacks.
Yeah.
But they also developed a lot in Bentonville. They put a lot of money into that. And I know that they've actually donated to Thor as well. So that might be someone you want to knock on their door and just go, hey, might have some connections for you there. So at Millard West, you're going to be a senior. You race NICA. Tell me how does NICA work? How does it work?
Well, basically, it's a cycling league for middle schoolers and high schoolers. There's teams in, I don't know, 30-something states across the nation.
Okay.
And I think the best thing about NICA, well, for one, it's a volunteer organization, right? So all the coaches, everybody involved are volunteers, which is awesome. But I kind of like to say it's a choose your own adventure for the kids because it can be as competitive or non-competitive as you want it to be as a student athlete, right? So if you want to be a top racer and you want to train and you want to like go to races and win everything, that can be your path. If you just want to join a team just for the camaraderie and the fun of it and just go to practices and not even do races, that's also a path you can take with NICA. We don't turn anybody away. There's no bench at NICA. So, like, you join a team, you're on the team. You get to go to practice. You get to have whatever opportunities you choose for yourself. And I think that's kind of the awesome thing. Like, it can be competitive if you want. It can be just pure fun and just hanging out with your friends if that's what you want it to be.
Well, you know, I can tell you from my own coaching experience, if you look at John O'Sullivan wrote a book called Changing the Game. And it was all about youth sports. One of the number one surveys out there for every kid is why do you play a sport? And the number one reason to this day still is to hang out with their friends. That's the number one reason why kids get into youth sports. And we need to encourage that more. Okay? Mm-hmm. Like in our day in the 80s, man, there's no joke. You left the house and you didn't come home till the streetlights came on. And we talk about this stuff, but the reality is our parents were like, get out of the house, go do something. And nowadays it's just, we have more structured play for kids and the least amount of unstructured play, which is how kids develop their cognitive development. Right. So I think that's really cool. And I like the fact that there's really no bench. You show up, you participate. And that, I think, is a very important thing too. What do you think about it, Claire?
I love it. It's just so awesome that everyone gets to do whatever. I personally like to go to race to win, but there's also people on my team that go to race just to have fun, and that's awesome that everyone gets to do what they want.
Like, see, those would be the kids I'd hang out with when it comes to mountain bike. Because I do. I mean, like, I like to ride, but I actually like to ride by myself because it's my way of being able to just kind of decompress and get away from other people, right? And so everyone has their reason for riding. It affects them differently. And you know, so those kids who go, they want to go and have a good time. I've seen groups of kids at some of the races. Like last summer, I saw a group of kids. I believe they were from the Elkhorn Composite team. And sat around and talked with them for a little bit. And how big is Millard West's team?
I think about 20 riders, maybe.
Oh.
20 to 30. 20 I to know, 30. Yeah. My team had a little, had 25-ish last year, so.
How many schools are in action? So this is a Nebraska-sanctioned sport, correct?
Yeah, so we the league has a Nebraska team. And in our league, I think, oh boy, I don't know. We have a bunch of new teams this year. I'm not sure how many actual total teams there are. But the way it works is you have to have a minimum number of students in a school for the school to have an actual team. So a lot of our teams are composite teams, right, made up of kids that just kind of live in the same area. They might all go to different schools. So the team I coach on is Millard Composite. So I have kids that are like at Millard South, and I have kids that are in middle schools like Russell and Beetle,
okay,
and all the different middle schools. But the high schools, if there aren't enough kids to actually form a high school team, they're on a composite team until they reach a certain threshold, which is four or five students. I can't remember what it is.
Yeah, one of those.
Yeah. Then they form a team for their school.
So with five riders, you can form a team with your school.
Yeah, I think it's four or five.
With the, you know, the fluctuation of, you know, freshmen coming in and seniors leaving, does that ever bounce them out of their own team back into a composite, or?
It hasn't happened yet. I think once kind of a team takes hold in a school,
right,
it really kind of gets the ball rolling.
Yeah, because then more people know about it, more people join, that
right,
kind of stuff.
Because then the school is advertising it on their sports, whatever, news pages or whatever, and so more, it just becomes more visible to more people and
okay,
kind of grows exponentially from there.
Rough guess, how many high school, middle school teams are there?
15.
That's not bad. That's really not bad.
Yeah.
Now, in some states, I imagine there's, you know, depending on the state, there's probably huge amounts.
So, our league last year's total students in the league was a little over 200. There are other states that have 2,000.
Wow.
Right. You know, well, think about states like Utah.
Colorado, you know, Utah. Yeah.
So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like lacrosse was a big East Coast thing, and now it's starting to get everywhere.
And Nebraska is unique, too, because, like, most of our population is so central to Omaha and Lincoln, right? So a lot of states have leagues or have teams that are all over the state. Right now, we're pretty centralized over this portion just because of the way the population is in the state.
Okay.
So, you know, we do outreach and stuff and try to spread our wings. Mm-hmm. We're getting there, but it's hard when everybody lives in kind of one part.
Do you, at Millard West?
Yeah.
How many girls are there?
Oh, no. Well, it was just me and Anna this last year. Anna's a senior, so she just graduated, and now it's just me again. I've been trying.
Claire's the ultimate, like, spokesperson for getting girls in a night because she tries.
I try very hard.
It's hard. It's really hard, especially when girls get to that high school age because, one, they've already kind of picked their path. Like, and this goes for all kids, too, you know. Like, they're a football player. They're a dancer. They're a theater kid. We want all of those people because I think a lot of people don't understand that NICA – it can be for everybody. Like, Claire does a million things, marching band, like all the music things, like so much. And she can still do NICA. It still fits into her schedule because
somehow.
Like I said, it's that choose your own adventure, right?
Sure.
You can come and go kind of as much as you are able to. And I think a lot of people don't realize how accessible it can be to mix in with their other activities.
Right. So of the cyclists you get in there, are a lot of them multi-sport, multi-activity people?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Most of them are. I mean, you know, like a lot. There's tons of band kids, which is amazing to me because band takes up more time, I think, than a lot of other sports, and people don't realize that. But, Yeah, we have lots of swimmers. We've had football players, soccer, like it runs the gamut because cycling is so, it's a great cross-training sport, right? For anything else.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it seems like a win-win to me looking from this side out, like why would you not want to be a mountain biker and pick up cycling as if for nothing else, cross-training for your other sport?
Well, I can specifically mention Naomi Choquette.
Mm-hmm.
I coached her in soccer. And then she worked at the Bikeway, and she's now a nursing student at Creighton University, right?
Also a really good mountain biker.
And she's a hell of a good mountain biker, right? Mm-hmm. And she had a sister who was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of women that are getting into it. And, you know, like Prairie Bloom gives you a classic example. There's a lot of really good riders there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't race them. I would just accept defeat before I even got on the track. I'm totally cool with that. I'd just be waving like, hey, good job. Just make sure the beer's cold when I get there. I mean, there's some great riders out there. Mm-hmm. So, and I imagine getting, you know, more girls involved into it. It's not really seen as, you know, kind of a girl's sport in some aspects, right? But if you think about it, it's good to know that you do a lot of different things as well. And like with Naomi, she played multiple sports. And I think we're getting into a point where people are trying to get their kids so selective in a sport at such an early age. But I can tell you the data completely discourages that. Until they're about a sophomore, they should be a multi-sport athlete until they're about a sophomore in high school, which means you play multiple sports. And then your sophomore year, you start to pick maybe two, right? And then by the end of your middle of your junior, you're kind of figuring out what your final path is. If you decide you want to actually take it to another level, like collegiate, you know, NCAA or NAIA, it just depends. But we're so eager to get kids into these select sports, you know, only one sport.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can tell you, my master's of sports science. You look at the Olympic development model, the long-term development model, and you'll see that the most successful kids in professional sports today were all multi-sport
all
athletes.
Kinds of stuff, right?
You ever heard of Wayne Gretzky?
I don't think so.
Oh, come on.
What?
The great one?
Hockey.
Oh.
So he used to say that, you know, what he wore on his feet depended on the time of year.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, he got drafted for baseball too. So, you know, he was a hockey player and a baseball player. You know, in my day, we did everything. It was football season. Play football. Basketball, you played basketball, or you wrestled, or you swam. In the spring, it was soccer, baseball, track, you know, whatever. So we played a lot of multiple sports. So it's good to know that you're doing those things. And I think that's a positive influence of this, is that it's getting you more active and stuff like that. Allison, you got a title with Nika.
I have several.
There's one that I'm really interested in,
mm-hmm.
and it's called GRIT.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about it.
So, yeah, I'm the GRIT coordinator for our league, and GRIT stands for Girls Riding Together. And it's basically a program that tries to recruit more female coaches and female student athletes into the league. And we do, like on race weekends, like I have a separate tent for race weekends. We do fun activities in the tent. Basically just provides kind of a safe space for girls in the league. I think the difference, one main difference between boys and girls is girls are just, we need a lot more reassurance, and like a lot more asking and a lot more like, you can do this kind of, you can tell a boy to like, hey man, there's a jump over there. Just go hit it. And they'll be like, yeah, do it. But like a girl wants to know, like, how fast should I be going? Where should my body be? Where should my pedals be? Is it, you know, like, is what could happen if I don't do something right? Like I think in general,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I ask all those questions.
Right. We want more information and we want to know,
they
want
to be successful
and we want to know how to be successful before we try something.
I will tell you with my background in coaching in women's soccer, right? They don't like failure.
Mm-hmm.
They do not like to not be successful at what they're attempting.
And I think also,
boys are different. You could tell them, no, there's no way for you to run through that brick wall, and they will keep trying. That's just the way we're kind of geared. But confidence with the female athlete is a huge, huge factor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to believe it to do it sometimes. Right.
Right.
And as I always tell my players, there should never be a moment where I believe in you more than you believe in yourself. And so you have to kind of get that athlete to that level where they have that confidence.
Yep.
And it's a challenge for a coach.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm assuming you're not the only woman coach.
No.
Yeah. So that, I mean, it's a nice role model perspective because you go out there and you actually tear it up.
I try my best.
Yeah.
You're pretty awesome.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think it's super important for girls and boys to see female coaches, you know, like, and to be coached by females, you know, just to open them up to seeing that what we're capable of, right?
Totally agree.
Mm-hmm.
It's no different than, I mean, all the data, if you look at it, they say, well, you know, female players need female coaches as role models. But the other data also says that female players need both female and male coaches from perspectives. But here's the funny thing. Boys need it too.
Mm-hmm.
Boys need male coaches and female coaches as well. It's a weird dichotomy that it's like if I'm out there with you and we're watching the same event, there's no way that both of us are going to interpret the same event in the exact same way.
Right.
Because there's things you're going to be seeing, there's things I'm going to be seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of like, well, when you have two brains working to make the athlete better, you get more success, you know, as long as both the coaches know their head from their backside, right?
Right.
So, like, I would not coach you in mountain biking. I'm just telling you that. I would not know, because I would be the guy that says, well, you see that jump? Yeah, you just go as fast as you can and just hold your breath and close your eyes as soon as you hit that top, all right? That would be, because that's how I would do it, right? But, I think that's important. So how successful is Grit?
I think we're doing pretty good. So last year we had the highest percentage of female staff and coaches on the Nebraska team than any other team. So, yeah.
Yeah. Good job there. Way to go.
Yeah. So, and, you know, we're just trying. We're trying to get as many girls in as we can. I think it's just what I've seen as a female mountain biker who started the sport, like, in the least ideal conditions possible, right? Like, riding with a bunch of dudes who just drop me constantly. To like the experience that I've seen other female mountain bikers do, and even student athletes in the league, like the amount of confidence that they show up with on the first day compared to the amount of confidence that they have like at the end of the race, their first race season, or after they've done their first big race, like just even I can look at them and how they're standing and just say that person, that female, just like grew so much through that experience that she just had. It's like it's changing, like mm-hmm. life changing for them. Like you can see the expression on their face, you can see how they're carrying their self, their posture, like how they're just pedaling on their bike. It's like they're completely different people after they have that experience.
My oldest daughter has a friend and they went through college together. And she actually grew up riding BMX, but then she shot up. She's like 6'2".
No, oh boy.
She's like almost as tall as me, right? So didn't quite work out. But to this day, if you talk to her about cycling, her face just lights up. You know, that's a common conversation in our house because of what I do. But there is that confidence, right? And I think that's huge for – I mean, the one thing we know is that when kids have confidence, they are more successful,
mm-hmm.
which just adds to that confidence. So, Claire, let me ask you a question, because this is an interesting topic when we're talking about success. How are you dealing with failure?
Like, in what sense? Like, what do you
mean? Let's say you go to attempt something and you crash or you wipe out, you know, you don't exactly hit it the way you want. How does working with the team and coaches help you deal with that process?
I mean, like, if I go to a race and I'm aiming for, like, top five and I don't get it, I'm not, like, I'm obviously upset because I'm kind of a little too competitive, but I'm usually just happy to be there.
Okay.
Because racing and biking is fun, and I just like hanging out with people, too. Okay.
I would offer this up. Claire has probably a healthier relationship with dealing with failure than a lot of people do. Like, she's very much like, it's cool. Like, I tried my best, and I'm just going to go work harder and do better next time. Like, yeah, she might not be the best example.
Well, I mean, the great thing about failure is it's one of the best ways to learn.
Yeah.
You know, and like I always tell people that the best thing about losing is you figure out how to win. Right. And so that gives you an opportunity to reflect on what you need to do to get better. So now is this a fall, spring, summer season? When is the season?
Summer, fall.
Yeah.
Summer,
we're
fall?
We're a fall league. So okay. All our races happen in the fall.
Are you going to end up being the only girl at Millard West?
Hopefully not.
We're going to try. Anna has a younger sister. We're trying to convince. I've been trying to convince my friends, but back to confidence, people are just too scared to try. I think that's what it is.
All right. So any of the parents out there from Millard West, Millard North, Millard South, if you have a daughter and you want her to gain some confidence and stay fit with a good group of people, get them off the couch, turn off the Netflix, and get them a bike.
Come play bikes with us.
And come, yeah, it's go fun. Play bikes, man. I mean, I always said that I have three daughters, and I've said that each one of you will pick a sport. I don't care what sport it is, but you will pick a sport. You know, I want you to play sports because there's just something about it, competitive wise. You'll never learn what you learn in athletics in a classroom, just things in the classroom that you won't learn on a pitch or a field or a trail or whatever, right? So there's that balance of making a whole person, mm-hmm. right? Giving them that competitive edge. All right, well, listen, we're going to take a quick second. We're going to do a commercial break here for our sponsors, and then we're going to be coming back, and we'll ask some more questions and talk a little bit more about the two young women that we have here with NYCA and everything else. All right, we're going to take a second here to give a shout out to our sponsor, The Bikeway. For a quarter century, The Bikeway has been the premier destination for all things cycling in Omaha and beyond, with a legacy of passion, dedication, and community. Discover the latest and greatest from top brands like Giant, Live, Transition, Santa Cruz, Scott, Bianchi, Sunday BMX, and DK. We've got the perfect ride to fuel your adventure. More than just a shop, explore our extensive selection of apparel and accessories. And the Bikeway Certified Service Department has you covered, from basic maintenance to suspension work to custom builds and everything in between. And while you're here, treat yourself to a delicious cup of coffee. As a rider-owned and operated establishment, you can trust that we're dedicated to providing the best possible experience for fellow enthusiasts like you. So join us at the Bikeway, where every ride is an adventure. Here's to 25 years of riding together and many, many more. And we are back. Okay, so once again, we are talking with Allison and Claire about NYCA and women in riding. And we're going to get kind of more into the NYCA process. I think if we see the process, understand it a little bit better, might actually help some, you know, parents understand what they're looking at and getting involved, getting their kids involved, boys and girls. During the commercial, Claire did tell me that, you know, girls are awesome and that the boys suck. And I asked her to explain that. So I said, well,
not her word.
I mean, not my words.
It was pretty close. I'm thinking it was close.
No.
But what we'll do is we're going to have her explain that process. So let's first talk about the NYCA event. So this is a summer fall season.
Yeah.
How does this work? I mean, like if somebody joins and they wanted to actually race, what's the very first thing that they do with NYCA?
Well, NYCA starts with usually weekly practices. It's different for every team. My team does practices on Tuesdays. It starts
July 1st is when teams are allowed to start practicing. They can have preseason events. So a lot of teams will do kind of just get-togethers like in the spring and early summer just to kind of get everybody, get the gang back together again and hang out like, and introduce new kids.
Yeah, I've seen some of the kids actually riding in NOS too. Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah.
And just kind of like a preseason conditioning competition mm-hmm. stuff, which mm-hmm. I think is kind of cool as well. I see a lot more youth in the NOS than I have in the past.
For sure, yeah. Lots of NYCA kids do the local races.
Which is very cool. So mm-hmm. then you start... Check your practices.
Yeah, start in July. And usually weekly practices is what most teams do. That's what my team does. And then the first like race of the season is the time trial. Usually it's Swanson. And when is that? Like
Middle of August.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that race isn't, it's not really a race. It's like a 3 mile loop that you do once, and how you place there is determines your placement for staging at races. So okay. If you get first in the time trial, you get called up first and get to choose your spot for staging.
Okay.
And that's how they determine staging for the first race.
So you do a time trial, you kind of evaluate where everyone's at, then they get their settings or placements where they get called up for the races. How many races do you guys do a year?
4.
And how long are those races?
They're different for every category. There's 5 categories: JV2, JV1, freshman, junior varsity, and varsity. Right?
I think so.
I'm
confused myself.
So I imagine
freshman would be lower than JV, though.
Is it? Wait, no, I'm thinking wrong.
Middle schoolers have their own categories based on grade, and then high schoolers have 4. I don't know, like, we're obviously not the people that are in charge of this.
Sure.
Wait, no, there's the middle school that has 6th, 7th, 8th, mm-hmm. and then there's freshman, JV2, JV1, and then varsity.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay. Got it. Finally,
we got
there.
Yeah, see, I mean, it's apparent that Claire only cares about her category, which is fine.
But yeah, the length of the race depends on the category that you're in. So some kids will do, usually our race loops are 2.5-ish, 3.5-ish miles.
But what determines long. How many laps you do is usually time.
Right.
It's
based on whatever category, and you kind of have a maximum time that you should be racing. So the middle schoolers, it's going to be around 30 minutes or 45 minutes, but like up to varsity can be up to like 1.5 hours.
Yeah, varsity is usually 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then in between is about, I think it's 1 hour. Those are the time breakdowns.
So you mentioned Swanson. Do you guys always race there, or are there other tracks that you race at?
Swanson's usually just the time trial. It's like right in the middle, and everyone can make it there for just the quick short lap that happens. But the race venues are different every year.
Mm-hmm.
Last year we went to Black Elk, Tranquility,
Blair,
and
Mascantine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But we've, like, this year we're going to have a race up at Cone Park.
Muscatine? Iowa?
No.
Oh, okay.
Up near Norfolk.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. There's State Park there, and it's beautiful. It's probably my favorite place to go for a race weekend because, like, you go up there, you camp, you hang out. It's gorgeous. Yeah, that's one thing we didn't really talk about. Race weekends are kind of, it's like a weekend. So it's like 2 full days of stuff to do. So racing happens on Sundays, but like Saturdays you do pre-rides, you do other activities. We have like an adventure program. So like fun games, and we like did a big scavenger hunt in one of the races last year and stuff like that. So it's not just the race weekends aren't all just about the racing. It's also about community and hanging out and doing fun stuff on your bike. And
but you get to ride the track the day before the race, so you can kind of figure out.
Yep,
that's cool.
Yeah, I'm there's sure. pre-riding on Saturday and also Sunday morning if you get there early enough. Yeah, you can pre-ride.
Okay. So you have races on the weekend, and then you had the time trial, which puts you where your placement is, but then. So let's say I'm a JV and you're a varsity, which actually makes a lot of sense if we're thinking about it, right? So
real life.
But I win by a second. Is it based on time for the race, or is like, do we get timed as we're making the rep, or are we actually going head to head?
No, you're racing separately. So okay.
Different
JV
categories, race separately.
Mm-hmm.
So my time is a second better than your time, and we ran the same track. So do I get more, is there like awards or points, or how does that system
You'd
work?
You'd be going against other JV people for placements. So if you got the best time overall, you'd get first place in JV 1 or 2, whichever one you were racing.
And you get a set number of points for that.
Okay.
Like and varsity, it's different. Varsity gets the most points awarded for, it's top 5 for every race.
Well, that's discriminatory.
But every placement has points, like even down to like 30th place. Mm-hmm. There's still a amount of points that you get for the team.
Okay. And is that what your focus is the individual points or the team points?
Both.
Yeah, both.
Right, because there's overall individual awards at the end of the season and there's overall team awards. So throughout the season, points are accumulated by teams and individual riders. And the individual riders get leader jerseys. So if you have the most points in your division during that point in the season, you get a jersey that says leader, and you're kind of the carrot to chase for everybody else.
Yeah.
You know what? I always wanted the pink polka dotted jersey in the Tour de France.
Yeah,
that was the one that I thought was the
ours
cool
are,
one.
Ours look much cooler than that.
This year we had really pretty blue ones with stars on them. Yeah. I like them a lot.
Nice. Did you get one?
Yeah.
There you go.
I got, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So now in during the break while we were talking, you'd mentioned something about points being weighed differently. Let's talk about that.
What do you mean?
For the girls versus boys.
Oh, yeah. The girls' points are weighted more, so teams are encouraged to recruit more girls. Like, for example, for varsity, first place, for boys, it's 500. For girls, it's 575. That's the only one I know off the top of my head.
Okay.
But for girls, you get more points for girls.
So, for example, Millard West, they finished their season last year.
Yes.
And what was the total team points that they had?
2,600 something, I think.
Okay. How many points did you get?
Around 1,700.
See,
I think.
And folks, that's where she told me the boys suck.
Okay? I did not say that.
So basically, from a strategic standpoint, some good female riders is
just female riders.
If you have some female riders, one that gives you an advantage. But if you have some good female riders like you, Claire, then that gives you a huge advantage. I mean, tactically or strategically, you want more girls on your team.
You
want a more diverse group, which makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, points for the teams are like at the end of the season, the overall team points are based off the top eight riders of your team. So the top eight who have the most points, that's totaled up, and that's your team score.
Oh, okay, so if you have a team of 30 people, they just take the top eight scores.
Yeah.
For your total team.
Yeah, at least that's how Nebraska does it.
Okay. And then do you guys have like a final race, a championship, or anything like that where you take the top two racers from each team of each school and you put them all together and see if they can go head-to-head?
We don't. That would be cool, though. I know other states do it.
I just thought
but
of that
we
at the top of my head. That's why my brain is always thinking about how do we make this bigger and better and more fun.
I think at this point our league is pretty small compared to other states, right? So, I mean, we could do that. It wouldn't really...
I mean, yeah, we have, you said this earlier, we have about 200 riders while other states have like 2,000. So it's kind of harder for us to have more.
You know what would be cool? This is just my own opinion. But take the top riders, the very top rider of each school, male and female. And then whichever team, the top two riders, whichever team gets the best points in that final ride, then they get the overall trophy. So if you don't have a female rider, you're screwed. You don't get the points, right? So that's going to cause your job to get real easy on grid. Be like, maybe you have to hide your phone number, to be honest with you. So, but yeah, I think that's really a good way of doing it, the way you guys have it set up as it is. And as you guys expand and grow, you're obviously going to add more events and things like that to it. The trails I'm kind of interested about. I mean, that seems like there's some really good trails you guys are riding.
Yeah, and we try to kind of switch it up. We have raced it, the same trails kind of over and over the years, but we like going to different places for sure, right? So it's kind of a rigorous process to vet a trail for a NICA race, right? There's very kind of strict standards on what the race trail can have and should not have. And so a lot of places kind of aren't available to us. Like, we have to have a huge area for start finish and for tents and team tents and stuff like that. So while it'd be awesome to like do NICA races at, I don't know, Lewis and Clark, not even a possibility, right? Because there's no available space to set up anything like that. We have to have a huge infield for all of our like start finish line and all the team tents and stuff like that. Parking is an issue for race venues. That's usually one of our biggest issues, funnily, like as silly as it sounds. Like, we have to have parking available for all the racers and all the spectators and stuff. And then just like trail features, like it has to be a safe trail for all levels that are going to be racing there. So we have to think about what's going to be safe for beginner sixth graders, but that also is going to still be fun for you know, varsity high schoolers to race right. on.
So. Again, why Lewis and Clark is not a viable option.
But you know, just an example, like
yeah.
there are lots of places where the trails are awesome and would be perfect for us to race at. We just can't do it because of the other things that we need in a venue. So
have you guys coordinated at all with Thor and trying to include some of these things when they're doing trail rebuilds?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's definitely, there's conversations happening between Nike and Thor to like, build facilities that would be great Nike race venues for us.
Nice.
Yeah. Also just good for everyone to ride. No one wants to have a new trail built and then it's just like a big jump line. Not everyone can appreciate that.
Right.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So, how long has Nike been around? 2 years, 3 years?
Officially, I mean, it's like 5 or 6 years.
Okay. And when did it become sanctioned with the state of Nebraska high school?
2019 was our first official year. Does that sound right?
I have no idea.
Yeah. So the first, you know, COVID kind of threw a wrench into a lot of our operations for the beginning of our league. So that kind of slowed us down at the start, I think, a little bit and made things a little more difficult. But yeah.
Well, I mean, but you're still getting some growth, though. I mean, you're still seeing some growth. You're
every
getting
year.
Some schools
yep.
adding programs.
Yep.
Players are getting in. You're getting more people in.
Mm-hmm. New teams every year.
Yeah.
How many people are on your team at Millard West?
About 20 to 30, I'm pretty sure. We always have new freshmen coming in.
Sure.
Yeah. And we're just like, we're still seeing numbers increase because like now is the time period where we're recruiting new student athletes. So, and you can join at any time during the year too. Like you don't have to get in there before like this certain date. You can
yeah. Like it could be like after the second race is already done. You're like, oh, that looks fun. Mm-hmm. And you can just join for the third.
So what's the largest team out there right now?
I would guess, well, I think it used to be, Lancaster Composite, but they eventually had to split up, right? Because they had got too many kids per school. So then they had to like start making school teams.
Okay.
I would say they're the biggest, like organized kind of group of teams.
Okay.
It's pretty much all of Lincoln.
Oh, wow.
Is, you know,
Lincoln has a lot of composed bike riders.
Those teams. So,
Platte River State Park is in between Omaha and Lincoln. Is that a facility that you guys ever use?
Mm-mm. No.
No.
Really? That place has got a lot of parking.
It has parking. It doesn't have, well, one, the trails there, I think, aren't super NICA friendly.
They're like a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
Like middle schoolers probably would not have the most fun time out there. Lots of hills, lots of features, that kind mm-hmm. of stuff.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're, you know, do you guys rate trails like in categories? Like think of whitewater rafting, right? You know, category 5 whitewater rafting is insane. Category mm-hmm. 1 is, mm-hmm. you know,
I mean,
a cooler floating down the stream.
Trails
right?
have ratings, but I don't think we really take that in consideration when doing NICA stuff.
No. I mean, there's a position within the NICA staff of a person who is in charge of vetting out trails for races. So like they uh-huh. go like and do and Bree's part of this kind of like there's a core people on the race staff that go and do venue surveys and they will go to different places and look at the features, good look at all of the available area that is there, the parking, like I said, the staging areas, all that stuff to figure out what's going to be a good place for a NICA race.
Okay.
The other thing too is safety. Like there has to be easy ins and outs for emergency vehicles, like stuff like that too is another big thing we have to think about for NICA races.
Yeah. Yeah. Access.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Risk management, very mm-hmm. important.
It's extremely important in NICA.
So Claire, are you going to try to ride in college?
Yeah, for sure. Especially since I've been looking at going to Arkansas where there's lots of mountain bike trails right around the campus.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great thing about college. It literally is the longest party you'll ever attend.
what are you talking about?
I don't do parties. I like bike.
Good, good. Well, guys, I want to thank both of you for coming in. It's kind of an interesting weekend because we have so many people gone. They're all down doing the Bentonville events that are going on this weekend. But I want to thank you guys for coming in. You know, hopefully when the season happens, maybe we can actually come out and do a podcast out there while at a live event, see if we can't interview people and some of the other people that are involved and try to get more people. And if anything we can do to help you guys encourage more kids to be healthy and active, man, just, you know, pick up the phone, shoot me a text, give me a call. We're happy to do that.
That would be awesome.
So thanks again, guys.
Thank you.
So I got Claire and Allison here from NYCA and also Prairie Bloom. And we want to thank them for coming in. And unfortunately, that brings us to the end of another awesome episode of Spokespeople Podcast, where we talk about all things cycling. Special shout out to The Bikeway in Omaha, Nebraska, a full service shop. Check them out. I am your spokesperson, Dave. The other Dave is out riding on this beautiful Memorial Day weekend, but he shall return, where we were going to talk about new ideas with new guests. So please tune in. And until then, stay safe and keep riding.